The views and opinions expressed by hosts and guests on Patriots with Grit do not necessarily reflect those of Patriots with Grit LLC, its founders, and owners.
Get ready for truth bombs and guidance from conservative leaders and entrepreneurs, from God-fearing, freedom-loving, truth-telling, patriotic Americans. Welcome to Patriots with Grit. Now let's jump into today's episode with your host, Darren Ross.
Hey, I'm not Darren, but I'm starting this. We have somebody on here that's going to talk about the 9/11, talk about the engineering of it, and look at all of the things that they have found that's been hidden from us. And I think you're going to find out there's some critical scientific things that tell us it wasn't the planes that brought them down.
Yeah, I thought all along something was a little bit fishy after we saw that on September 11th. But we have a great truth-telling architect today is going to share some truth bombs with you guys. We're going to be right back with our awesome guest today, Mr. Richard Gage.
You flu shot that body, and now you spike-vax that body. You shouldn't get Spikevax if you've had an allergic reaction to Spikevax or its ingredients. Rare cases of inflammation of the heart muscle and outer lining have been reported. The most common side effects are injection site pain, redness and swelling, tiredness, headache, muscle pain, chills.
Actually, we could demonstrate the spike protein in practically all organs.
The vaccines have ravaged the population. The spike protein is proven to cause four major domains of disease.
Spikevax that body with Spikevax by Moderna.
Then you can see also that the nerve cells express the spike protein. And I personally would prefer to use my nerve cells for thinking and not for producing the spike protein.
Please welcome San Francisco Bay architect Richard Gage, AIA member of the American Institute of Architects and co-founder and former CEO of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. He, along with his courageous wife, Gail, continues to lead the charge toward a real investigation into the destruction of all three World Trade Center skyscrapers on 9/11 at richardgage911.org. Richard, thanks so much for being on here and being a truth teller today, my friend, at Patriots with Grit. We appreciate having you on.
Thank you, Darren, and thank you, Randy. It's an honor to be here with you guys.
I tell you what, I never really thought much about any of this stuff until a good friend of mine kind of opened my eyes when he started talking about Waco, and then he started talking about Oklahoma City,
yep.
And I'm like, come on. And then at that point, I was running a company and raising kids, and then 9/11 happened. He's like, okay, you ready to listen now? And I'm like, I think so. So after about 2 or 3 months of watching just endless news on 9/11 and how it was just all terrorist driven and how they'd took over planes with box cutters and all that stuff, I started to think, kind of like what I thought during COVID, we're not being told the truth. This is a bunch of nonsense. So I know you have done a lot of research. You're probably, I would say, Randy, he's probably one of the nation's most prolific researchers and scientists in the 9/11 truth movement, Richard. I would say that has to be the case.
So you're an architect. You're familiar with construction. How many other architects do you think around the country are on board with this kind of evidence?
Well, there are 3,600 of them signed on to the public petition demanding a new investigation into the destruction of all three World Trade Center skyscrapers on 9/11. And that is a lot of architects and engineers. The official narrative has only about a dozen or two dozen publicly signed on architects and engineers.
All right.
And they're mostly engineers. We've got a long way to go in terms of getting them all aware of the evidence we're going to be looking at today.
Well, Richard, I know everybody's heard about the Twin Towers. It seemed like that took over the news and the newspapers, the news channels. That was before social media, obviously, but very few people seem like ever heard of Building 7. And when you talk to Building 7, they looked at you kind of like a deer in headlights, or kind of like the German Shepherd, turning their head like, what are you talking about, Building 7.
Didn't it burn down?
Building 7. What's Building 7? So let's talk about World Trade Center 7, Richard, and kind of educate our audience on what that was, how it was brought down, and where it was located compared to the Twin Towers.
Let's do it, because it's an important starting point. In fact, if you want to share my screen there, we don't want your audience, Randy and Darren, to be the last to know. This is extremely important information. Every architect and engineer should be apprised of this third skyscraper to collapse on 9/11, and yet most don't even know about it. In fact, I'm one of 90,000 members of the American Institute of Architects, and they didn't send out one bulletin on this incredibly rare collapse, according to the official narrative, by fire. And so if fire can bring down a skyscraper down at free fall acceleration, just like the old controlled demolitions that we've seen in Las Vegas, then we all the codes, the structural codes should have been radically reviewed and changed. They weren't. And so we would not have firefighters going up into these buildings if a few small scattered fires can bring them down like this suddenly, instantly. It's obviously a lie on the part of NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology. And that's why we bring people's attention to it. It is indeed the third largest skyscraper in the World Trade Center complex, but the tallest building in most of our states. But next to the Twin Towers, it's just kind of dwarfed, right?
How many stories buildings. Was it?
47.
Okay.
And these were the towers were the tallest buildings in the world at the time that they were built, which was, and up until that time, it was the Empire State Building. So a lot has changed in the industry. But this building has some mysteries associated with it. It was about a football field in length away from the North Tower. And indeed, when the North Tower went down and the South, the North Tower shed some of its structural steel members laterally, which we'll get into, onto the Building 7. But this damage was not, according to NIST, part of a significant factor in the building's collapse. What was? Well, we see the building standing just fine here. It was about 7 hours later that this happens. The East penthouse comes down first and six in an isolated event, and then about 6 seconds later, this happens.
And for those of you just listening on the podcast, I would highly recommend jump over to any of our video channels on Rumble or Cloud Hub or Gab, any of those. You can see the video that Richard's referring to here as he sees these buildings collapse.
Exactly. And you'll see the buildings also. As well as our documentaries on this subject at richardgage911.org. So the building collapses just like the old hotels in Las Vegas. And yet this is the official narrative by Shyam Sunder that they collapsed primarily due to fires. Well, what's the problem with that?
What?
We've never in history lost a steel frame skyscraper due to fires. And these are the worst fires that we have photographic or video evidence of in the building. As you can see, they're few, they're small, and they're scattered throughout the building. So they were out, burned out an hour before the building ever came down. So we've had many skyscrapers, dozens and dozens, with much hotter, larger, and longer lasting fires in them that, again, have never collapsed. Steel frame, fire-protected buildings do not collapse due to fires. It hasn't happened after 9/11, even in these fully engulfed buildings with fire. It's unprecedented. So this is an extraordinary claim by NIST. To even make this claim, so it should be provided with extraordinary evidence. And guess what? It was not. No. So let's take a look, though. On the right, a series of known controlled demolitions. On the left, Building 7. Is there any similarity? Is there enough similarity to warrant an investigation into the possible use of explosives, especially since fire, the official cause of this building's collapse, has never in history brought down a steel frame fire protected building? Go ahead.
If I didn't know what I was watching, Richard, I would think I was actually watching a video of a Las Vegas hotel being imploded.
Yeah.
As we see WT7 exactly like come down.
It's fascinating to watch, actually. It's not too delightful to contemplate, though, because how do you get into a building like this and set explosives? Well, you have to do it very surreptitiously. This building was occupied, and, well, not when it went down, but during the months and weeks leading up to 9/11. And so somebody got in there while it was occupied and set up explosives. Well, we have a series of features associated with controlled demolition. One of them, let's go through them because it's really important. Sudden onset of destruction near the base of the structure. Do we have that here? Let's listen to Dan Rather describe it for us.
What you're seeing are high shots.
Oh, you're not hearing Dan,
here,
are you?
We're going to show you a video.
Oh, yeah, we hear Dan very well. Itself. Very well.
Okay.
Videotape the collapse of this building.
It's amazing.
Amazing, incredible, pick your word. For the third time today, it's reminiscent of those pictures we've all seen too much on television before, when a building was deliberately destroyed by well-placed dynamite to knock it down.
What? Deliberately destroyed by well-placed dynamite to knock it down?
How long did he stay employed after that, Richard?
Yeah. No, he did have some employment issues, but I don't know if this had anything to do with it. But we've never seen this building. He's never repeated that statement after 9/11.
Imagine that.
B. We've never seen this building on TV with like one or two exceptions since then. It's like it's been swept under the rug. And as I mentioned, the American Institute of Architects didn't tell their entire clientele, the high-rise architects, who are tasked with ensuring the public safety. We have to know about this stuff. It should have been the most studied building failure ever. Do we have a straight down symmetrical collapse into the building's footprint? Feature number two. Well, let's take a look from West Street. Pretty straight down, pretty symmetrical.
Pretty straight.
How does that happen with office fires that are scattered and few and far between? It doesn't happen. Let me make a note here.
Yeah, with scattered fires, for the people that don't know anything about fire and the chemistry of fire, I mean, you've got to have a hot concentration in one area to affect any of the steel members.
What do you know about fire? Let's tell our audience so that they know that you're legit.
Oh, I got a minor in fire science.
So you know a little bit thing about heat, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure that give you some credibility there.
Well, then you would know that those fires are not capable of what is needed for a symmetrical collapse. You have to remove all the core columns instantly. There's 24 of them, by the way, instantly. And then followed about a second later, the perimeter columns. And repeat that on every floor. So how does that happen by these fires? It's not going to happen, right? We're getting the picture. It's pretty intuitive. We don't have to think too hard about this, but let's take the next step. How fast is a building coming down? David Chandler, physics teacher, documents this. It's coming down at free fall for at least a third of its 7-second fall. This is as fast as a bowling ball falling out of the sky. That means that not one of these columns gave any resistance, because that's the definition of free fall. No resistance for any part of that free fall acceleration. And this is even admitted by NIST after they denied it for 7 years, by the way. In their final report, they include the stage two here, which is absolute free fall. The beginning second and the ending second are about almost that, and meaning the building is accelerating, getting faster and faster and faster, straight down through what? The 30,000 tons of structural steel, or maybe 40, in this building. I mean, it's absolutely incredible. So where did those columns go? That's the question we have to ask all at once, instantly. And so we can see that, you know, they've been completely severed one from another, because we have a 47-story skyscraper compressed to about six stories at the top of the pile. And so it's like a house of cards. You know, when buildings collapse, they fall naturally. They tend to fall over to the path of least resistance. Their columns and beams are not severed one from another. The concrete is not pulverized to a fine powder, which we'll be looking at in a moment. There aren't, in that case, it was earthquakes. In this case, since we have explosions, we'd be looking for witnesses of explosions. Here's Daryl, a medical student, standing by that evening. Interviewed on 1010 Winds Radio. He says a sound of a clap of thunder, a shock wave ripping through the building, windows busting out, and then the building coming down. And Kevin McPadden, former Air Force man.
You heard explosions, like boom. It's like a distinct sound. It's not like when in compression, like boom, 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 boom. Floors that were dropping and collapsing. This was boom, and like you felt a rumble in the ground, like almost like you wanted to grab onto something. That, to me, I knew that was an explosion. There was no doubt in my mind.
Wow. And this gentleman, Bill Rosati.
I was standing like two blocks away, and all of a sudden I just seen a big flash, and then I seen the building coming down, and I just seen people just running everywhere, chaotic like.
Wow. Okay. Well, what could have caused those explosions? What could have severed those columns and brought this building down? We have to look for examples of persistent and extreme heat, including any evidence of molten steel or iron, which would be evidence of incendiaries. Thermite is an incendiary used by the military to cut through steel like a hot knife through butter. Let's see if we have any evidence of ignited thermite. Here is from FEMA, their metallurgical examination, which cites liquid molten iron invading the grain boundaries of the steel. This came out in Appendix C, May 2002, Building Performance Assessment Team Report. What do we have? Never before observed in building fires, eutectic reactions causing intergranular melting, capable of turning the solid steel girder into Swiss cheese, like you see in this piece of World Trade Center 7 steel. Interesting. From Building 7, rapid oxidation, sulfidation, what? Liquid iron, oxygen, and sulfur formed during this hot corrosion attack on the steel. No clear explanation for the source of the sulfur. Well, where would the sulfur have come from? Sulfur is added to thermite to become thermate, much more effective at cutting through steel.
So it pretty much superheats and burns through it, correct?
Yeah, that's exactly right. They use shaped cutter charges placed against the steel, and it's the liquid iron, which is molten iron, is forced through the steel. So steel members in the debris pile that appear to have been partly evaporated in extraordinarily high temperatures, says the author of this report, Dr. Jonathan Barnett. Wait a minute. Evaporating steel? That takes 4,000 degrees. Where are we going to get those temperatures in office fires, which typically burn, especially in this case, only about 500 or 600 degrees Fahrenheit, about an eighth of that which can evaporate steel? And yet Abelhausen Astani Azel says, as a structural engineer from UC Berkeley, I saw melting of girders. And he's showing you the melting of girders from this piece of World Trade Center 7 steel. My goodness, what could melt the girders? Well, we can see the material pouring out of the molten material pouring out of the crab claw excavators. They've never seen anything like this. These guys are freaked out. We can tell because of the physics of molten metals like this, what the temperature is. We're exceeding 2,500 degrees Fahrenheit. But because it's actually molten, we're exceeding 3,000 degrees because of the bright yellow and white hot color there. Well, so that, if that was evidence of ignited incendiaries, is there any more evidence in the World Trade Center dust of ignited incendiaries, i.e. thermite? Well, the U.S. Geological Survey in 2005 did their particle atlas of the World Trade Center dust. What did they find? Billions of previously molten iron microspheres, about the diameter of a human hair on average. They get real curious. This is not supposed to be there. They don't know what it is. They don't even speculate. But they document it very carefully. In fact, up to 6% of some of these dust samples, like this one from the Deutsche Bank building, are comprised of molten iron microspheres, previously molten iron. And that's pretty incredible. It amounts to about 4 tons by extrapolation. And so the EPA actually says that we don't know where these came from, these spheres, but they're unique to the World Trade Center dust. In fact, it's a signature component, but we don't know what it is, right? We're not willing to find out, apparently, either. So let's do a controlled experiment of thermite and see where they might come from. They look like sparks, but if you look carefully, you see molten iron microspheres. That's what is one of the main byproducts of thermite, the other one being aluminum oxide ash, a cloud, if you will, of the stuff. How do they get spherical, these spheres? Well, aerosolized liquids form themselves into spheres under extreme pressure by surface tension. That's just what they do. That's what raindrops are, too. They're spherical. So could that be what's accounting for the toasting of the tops of these cars? Falling liquid molten iron microspheres from the World Trade Center dust. It's the only rational explanation in this very high heat event that can be accounted for. The official narrative can't account for.
So, Richard, so as that dust, that concrete dust fell, it had the hot beads of iron or metal in it. So could that itself been burning people that were close by, or was it cooled by the time it got to, say, this area?
The dust was described, the clouds of dust that people were running from, mm-hmm. as very hot.
Okay.
Yeah. And one would expect it to be cooled when it got many, many blocks out. But that's a good question. Apparently not, because what else can account for the toasting of the tops of these cars?
Right.
This isn't something that directed energy weapons do. And so that's been one of the posited causes of the burning of the tops of the cars. Well, so do we have any evidence of unignited thermite? Because all of that was clearly evidence of ignited thermite. Let's look in the World Trade Center dust again. A team of 8 international scientists, led by Niels Harrit in Copenhagen, got real busy and collected 7, independently collected samples were sent to them, and of the dust from all across lower Manhattan. And they find these curious red-gray chips, red on one side, gray on the other, dual-layered, indicating that it was like paint fluid applied. They thought it was paint, because it looks like primer paint, right? Well, they get real curious because the chips are attracted with a magnet, meaning they have a high iron content. Wow, what's going on here? They zoom in or analyze the red layer on top here with X-ray energy dispersive spectroscopy. And they find what? The ingredients of unignited thermite. in all of these paint chips, iron oxide, which is essentially rust, and aluminum. What is that doing in all of the paint chips? Well, they zoom in 50,000 times with an electron microscope, and what do they find? Nano-sized particles of iron oxide crystals and aluminum platelets, about 1,000 times smaller than the diameter of a human hair. These materials are set in a matrix, which is very interesting because it's organic material, oxygen, silica, carbon is found. And organic material is used in TNT to expand rapidly and knock things over through the gases that are created. And so this material is really pretty specific and high tech. It's not made in a cave in Afghanistan. This is made only in the most advanced defense contracting laboratories. Well, this team put the chips in a heater, a fancy heater, a differential scanning calorimeter, and at about 800 degrees Fahrenheit, they ignite. What do you imagine that they produce when they ignite? Molten iron microspheres with the same chemical signature as the molten iron microspheres found in all the World Trade Center dust samples analyzed by the U.S. Geological Survey and R.J. Lee Group, an international environmental consulting firm. So we know exactly where all those molten iron microspheres came from. It's not a mystery, as claimed by the EPA and the U.S. Geological Survey. We know, as if we didn't know. They're found actually attached to partially ignited red-gray chips also. So we conclude here in this paper in the Bentham Open Chemical Physics Journal that the red layer is active unreacted thermitic material incorporating nanotechnology. It's a highly energetic pyrotechnic or explosive material. So pretty darn interesting stuff. All of that portion of that presentation applies to the Twin Towers as well, because these chips and these spheres are found all over the World Trade Center. So we've included them in among the 60 exhibits provided to the U.S. attorney for a special grand jury investigation. And we're making a film, 9/11 Crime Scene to Courtroom, an unprecedented film series taking the hard evidence of 9/11 crimes to court. And people can support this effort and co-produce this because we're in our post-editing phase right now. We've already filmed Mick Harrison and myself and two dozen experts. And we're piecing this together now. And it will also go to the grand jury as supplementary evidence. So we'll be taking this also to this series and the 60 exhibits to a federal judge in D.C. to be given to a special grand jury for investigation as well.
Richard, I want to jump in here real quick. When do you expect that film, Crime Scene to Courtroom, to be released?
Starting in April, we'll be putting out one every couple of weeks. There's a couple of dozen episodes in this series. And then we'll make a two-hour film out of it as well in the end. So it's coming out, and encourage you guys to help us at richardgage911.org. So I asked myself, my gosh, if Building 7 was so clearly a controlled demolition, that was part of the conspiracy of 9/11, right? It happened on the day of 9/11. They lied to us about it. Could they be lying to us about the World Trade Center towers? Could we have any of the features of controlled demolition in the towers that we had in Building 7 and more? Oh, yeah. Let's start with a sudden onset. well, actually, first, let's look at them together. What do we notice? They're identical. The collapses actually occur 15 minutes apart. But here we can see that they are, in fact, identical, with upward-outward arching streamers, a geometry of fireworks freely flying molten objects trailing thick white smoke clouds, which we'll get into the evidence of. But just seeing that up front is really rather extraordinary. Do we have a sudden onset of destruction? Yeah, let's look at the North Tower. It's still in motion. And all of a sudden, there's uniform downward motion. No jolt, no hesitation. Upon when the upper part impacts the cold, hard, intact steel below. That's pretty darn enlightening. The South Tower, same thing. It's still, and all of a sudden, it's in uniform downward motion. No jolt or hesitation. You might see some jolt or hesitation because of the internet slowing it down. But what we're told is by NIST is that the upper part drove the rest of the building down to the ground and then destroyed itself. This was given to us by Zdenek Bezant of Chicago Northwestern University. He calls it the crush-down, crush-up theory in a complex four-page paper that he submitted just 2 days prior to 9/11, by the way.
And imagine the timing on that.
I meant
2 days after. 2 days after.
Oh, but
this is a piece of mathematical wizardry. I mean, everybody else is in shock, right? You and me. And so he's spending time in his den calculating away when we don't even know what's gone on yet, figuring out the theoretical basis for this building's failure, which NIST ended up relying upon him for. In their $20 million report.
Well, he was about as quick to get this report done as they were to haul off all the debris.
Yeah, excellent point, you guys. That is the destruction, illegal destruction of evidence.
And I want to get into that, too, before we conclude today, too, Richard.
You bet. And the problem with this theory is that it completely ignores Newton's third law of motion. So this crush-down, crush-up theory from Zdenek Bezant of Chicago Northwestern University completely defies the third law of motion by Newton, which is where we get our laws of motion, and is established science today. He's saying that the upper part drove the rest of the building down to the ground. That's like saying, okay, I can avoid any of the equal and opposite destructive force when two bodies collide. You can't avoid that. It's like saying, so the Volkswagen can't crush the Mack truck, right? Does it matter if we drop the Volkswagen onto the Mack truck? No, it's not going to crush it either, right? The lightest part of an object cannot possibly destroy the heavier, cold, hard, intact steel below. It's a virtual pyramid structurally. We have very lightweight steel up above, getting thicker and thicker as we come down below. The core columns get thicker and thicker until at about mid-height, we got 2 inches thick columns and 36 inches wide, but they get bigger and they get thicker as you go down. At the bottom, we have almost solid steel, 52 inches by 22 inches. So no, it's not going to be crushed by a Volkswagen, right? Not going to happen. So let's just take a look at it. In fact, tell me if the upper part is destroying the lower part or if something else is going on. Let's make it easier for you. Watch the red line. It doesn't move down until about now. So the upper part is destroying itself or is being destroyed by something. It's not pushing the bottom part down to the ground. Its structural integrity is being removed from it in the first 3 seconds at least. So after that, something else very different happens. In fact, after that, we have upward, outward arching streamers again, geometry of fireworks, almost like the volcanic eruption in the Tongan Sea with solid objects that are molten, trailing thick white smoke clouds, which we'll come back to. if the upper part was destroying the lower part, we would see it, but not one of the photos or videos show an upper part of the building driving the rest of the building down to the ground. It's not there. If it were there, it would have destroyed these few remaining core columns standing 1,000 feet in the air, right? Because we're talking, this is a pile driver. You got this huge section. In the case of the South Tower, it was 30 stories tall. North Tower, 15 stories tall. But no, these remain, and then they suffer an explosion at the bottom and then drop down. You can see the top of this steel column, the tall one, dropping every frame through. If it were there, it would have crushed this spire. It's called these few remaining core columns standing 1,000 feet in the air for 6 seconds until they receive an explosion down below, and then they descend frame by frame, the top piece descending through the concrete powder that has been created, which we'll get to, and shaken off of. So we would also look at the second feature of controlled demolition, patterned explosions and flashes of light. We know that the Thomas von Eschen, the fire commissioner of the New York Fire Department, commissioned 500 of his first responders. And we know that about 186 of them, which were commissioned to give their oral testimonies within a month after 9/11, 12,000 pages of testimonies read by Professor Graham McQueen. Now 186 eyewitnesses of explosions. Like, we felt the ground shake. You could see the towers sway, and then it just came down. Well, gosh darn, what are we talking about? This is a specific order of events. Again and again, you're going to hear these first responders talking about the phenomena of explosions, seeing, hearing, feeling, and before the towers actually come down. Check it out. All of a sudden, the ground just started shaking. It felt like a train running under my feet. The next thing we know, we look up and the tower is collapsing. It shook my bones. Shortly before the first tower came down, I remember feeling the ground shaking. I heard a terrible noise, and then debris just started flying everywhere. I saw a flash, flash, flash at the lower level of the building. You know, like when they demolish a building? With each popping sound, initially an orange, and then a red flash came out of the building. And then it would just go all around the building on both sides. Saw a number of brief light sources being emitted from inside the building between floors 10 and 15. He saw about 6 of these brief flashes accompanied by a crackling sound before the tower collapsed. I saw low-level flashes. I saw flash, 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 and then it looked like the building came down. You ever see professional demolition where they set charges on certain floors and you hear pop, pop, pop? When I heard that friggin' noise, that's when I saw the building coming down. Now, NIST is telling us that these phenomena are created by the building coming down, but they're hearing, seeing, feeling it before the building comes down. And NIST did not include any of these testimonies in their final report or any of their reports. They're completely censoring this from the public. An explosion appeared at the very top. Simultaneously, from all four sides, material shot out horizontally. And then there seemed to be a momentary delay before you could see the beginning of the collapse. How specific is Frank Crothers, firefighter, on this? There was an explosion in the South Tower, one floor under another. When it hit about the fifth floor, I figured it was a bomb because it looked like a synchronized, deliberate kind of thing. Seemed like on television when they blow up these buildings. Seemed like it was going all the way around like a belt, all these explosions. The building was blowing out on all four sides. You actually heard the pops. You know, you heard the pops of the building. I thought the terrorists planted explosives somewhere in the building. That's how loud it was. A crackling explosive. Very specific. Another loud boom at the upper floors. Then there was a series of smaller explosions, which appeared to go completely around the building at the upper floors. And another loud earth-shattering blast with a large fireball, which blew out more debris. The lower level of the building. You know, like when they demolish a building? That's what I thought I saw. Did you see any flashes? He said, yeah, well, thought it was just me. He said, no, I saw them too. Everybody, I think, at that point still thought these buildings were blown up, so I was fully expecting anything else to blow up. You were there when the planes hit? No, I was there when the building exploded. Oh, you mean when it fell down? No, when it exploded. It's very specific.
Are you tired of the rising cost of your cable bill? If so, you are not alone. Millions of consumers are looking for ways to reduce their monthly cable or satellite bill. Thanks to Qu Streaming, you can finally stop looking. Many are saying that Qu Streaming is on track to be the best streaming platform in the world. For just $59.99 per month, Qu offers thousands of live channels and a huge library of movies and TV series on demand, with more being added regularly. We have top-tier channels, and there is no charge for pay-per-view. Stream on up to 5 devices at one time and watch from anywhere with a high-speed internet connection. Don't just take our word for it. Try it. See for yourself. There is no contract or hidden fees. If you are ready to experience the future of streaming, subscribe to Qu Streaming today. Qu Streaming. This changes everything.
Richard, the one thing that stood out to me in all those testimonials there, or testimonies from different EMS people, was the one about the terrorists planted explosives. We know that's true. And the terrorists came within, they planted explosives within the building on the columns or whatever. But we all know who the terrorists truly are.
Well, and these are three of the most highly secure buildings in the world. Is it likely Al-Qaeda had access to them? No. Outside the Pentagon, they probably are the next three highest buildings. After all, Building 7 had the IRS, the CIA, the Department of Defense, the Securities and Exchange Commission, which lost thousands of files, by the way, related to hundreds of cases that they were actively pursuing against Wall Street companies like Enron and WorldCom.
Well, and you mentioned earlier on at World Trade Center 7, I think at the very beginning of the show, it's 610 feet, 47 stories. That's about just I'd say 20 feet less than the St. Louis Arch. And I know people that have, if you haven't been to the St. Louis Arch, I mean, I've been up in it many times, but it's pretty massive. And to see World Trade Center 7 be almost as tall as that, and the others were much taller, is that's pretty amazing, in all honesty.
Other than the Twin Towers, it would be the tallest controlled demolition in the world. So it was a very risky project on their part. And so the question is, Building 7 came straight down. That's one of that's the third feature of controlled demolition. How straight down do the towers come? Well, as we saw, they were fairly straight down, but here in the South Tower, it actually begins to fall over. So interestingly, we have the building falling at 22 degrees off of the building below. We have asymmetrical damage from the fires and the planes up above. How in the world do we get complete symmetrical damage all the way down all four sides of the building? It's incredibly specific and symmetrical. It makes no sense given.
Well, and Richard, your opponents will say, I've seen animations where they say the heat from the plane warped the bar joist that had a poured deck on top of it. The bar joist bowed, slipped, and fell out of the brackets that held to the outer walls and to the center core. And then they said once one floor fell, it dominoed the rest of the way. And I'm not buying that either.
Well, that's what they're saying. But take a look here. What are we actually looking at in the leading corner of this destruction? We're seeing ahead of all the other floors, about 20 stories below the zone of destruction, about a dozen explosions right before our very eyes in this looped video, including an isolated explosive ejection, which we're going to get more into, called squibs in the controlled demolition industry. It's pretty amazing. You can see them. These are not mini nuclear weapons going off. These are explosions set in the perimeter wall, in this case, very clearly. So we know what's going on. We can see about three or four explosions per floor times about 12 floors there. Now let's look at the isolated explosions in particular, because we can see even 20 stories down below and 40 stories down below the zone of destruction. Even 60 stories down below, we see these explosions have no accounting in the official narrative whatsoever in a gravitational progressive collapse. It makes no sense. In fact, if we zoom in to the South Tower, we can see on the left side in this looped video, dozens of explosive ejections occurring out of the left, which is essentially taking the rigid body and destroying it, liquefying its structure, if you will. That makes no sense whatsoever in the official narrative either. But so we can tell what's destroying that upper section such that it doesn't drive the rest of the building down to the ground. It telescopes in on itself. How fast is the building coming down? Feature number five, it tells us that it's coming down by near free fall acceleration. David Chandler, a physics teacher, points out in his analysis that it's two-thirds of free fall acceleration. It's, in other words, it's still accelerating straight down. It's not getting slower. It's not decelerating when it meets the cold, hard, intact steel below, which would obviously slow down the rate of progression here. There's more steel in the facade of this building than glass. These 14 by 14 inch steel tube columns are providing a massive amount of resistance. According to the engineer, 20 times the amount of resistance it needs to resist the dead loads in the building. And that's because they had to beef it up so much to resist hurricanes. Because this building, hurricane winds, if you will, can be quite the load on a building pushing it sideways. So these Varandale trusses had to resist that. And that made them a whole lot more stronger than they needed to be. This is an incredible structure with a massive amount of steel in it, 47 per massive core columns, 240 steel perimeter columns. So then we have to ask ourselves, well, what happened to those columns and those beams? As we look at the lateral ejection, shooting 4-ton and 8-ton structural steel sections laterally, impaling themselves in skyscrapers all around the building at 500 feet away, and even destroying the World Financial Center 600 feet away. This is an incredible. How does gravity work? Down. What's going on here with these freely flying structural steel sections landing 300 to 600 feet in every direction? Watch this one. Whoa. Back to forward two. It starts out horizontally. How does gravity work? Down. And then out is what's happening here. What explosive force is sending this out? Why is it trailing thick white smoke clouds? Steel beams are not flammable in office fire conditions. They don't even begin to soften until 1200 degrees. They don't begin to melt until about 3000 degrees. So with this steel section, which is about to hit building 7, by the way, one of the pieces of damage to that building, we have something else going on. It's enough energy to hurl a 200-pound cannonball 3 miles. By the way, if 100,000 tons of steel framing in each of these buildings is distributed outside the footprint, you see the footprints in the center photograph, what's driving the building down to the ground? You know, what's crushing it? The steel is distributed laterally outside the footprint, almost all of it. Yet this was among the, in the calculations that Zdenek Bezant provided, this weight, which he multiplied by two, by the way, fraudulently, and that's been decoded by structural engineers like Tony Zambodi, Richard Johns, Gregory Zudolinski. This is at least a third of the weight of the building, and yet it's completely not there. I mean, the building is 1,200 feet wide, 200 feet wide, but the debris pile is 1,200 to 1,400 feet wide all around each of the buildings. The debris is sent well outside the perimeter of the World Trade Center. Again, on the left, destroying the Winter Garden 600 feet away. Okay, maybe the concrete was destroying the building, because that's pretty heavy also. Actually, it's about another third, at least, of the weight of the building. There should be about 110 floors, because each of them were an acre in size and 4 to 8 inches thick. But if we look at the aftermath, we don't see 110 floors stacked up. On the right, we see a real gravitational collapse in Mexico. On the left, we don't see any of those 110 floors, not 50, not 10, not one. Just a 4 or 5 story pile of miscellaneous metal. Where are they? Where the floors are missing. Oh, there they are. The concrete is pulverized in midair. In all the photos and all the videos, they show exactly this: 90,000 tons of concrete missing from each building, pulverized to 100 micron particles. Found and documented by the USGS as mostly concrete powder in the blanket 3 inches thick from river to river across lower Manhattan. That's where it is. Well, if that's where it is, how did it crush the building? Together with the steel, this is well over 2/3 of the weight of this building.
Well, I would think, Richard, anybody with a calculating brain who wasn't even a genius in school could look at this with the lateral ejection of the steel as well as all the pulverized powder and say, something doesn't add up here. You know, what really happened? Why are we being told one thing and seeing another? But my concern is, Richard, do you think people are just too busy to pay attention and they just don't care, or they don't want to know?
Well, maybe nobody told them. I'm wondering what percentage of patriots with grit actually knew all this information, and what are you going to do with it? Because we have you guys at home watching this information. What are you going to do with it? We have 10 key characteristic features and some very uncharacteristic features of controlled demolition. None of them can be accounted for by fire, let alone all of them, right? So with additional circumstantial corroborative evidence and testimony, which we get into in our documentary, 9/11 Explosive Evidence, Experts Speak Out, which is available on our website, richardgage911.org, we find this to be proof of controlled demolition. A body of proof we've put in many different videos, including these on our website, and a body of evidence that we've submitted to the U.S. Attorney for a grand jury investigation, and that will go further, again, along with the Building 7 evidence. The truth about 9/11 has to be told and shown. It actually has to be shown. The graphic evidence, the evidence is very graphic. You have to show people, because, you know, where do you draw your line in the sand? Do you say, well, this doesn't affect me right now. I got a job, you know. But at some point, the deep state that gave us 9/11 is giving us a full-on police state, a tyranny. You know that because you have been mandated or know people who have been mandated to take a shot, which is neither safe nor effective. So what are we going to continue to stick our heads in the sand? No, it's time to speak the truth about 9/11. We have to wake up. And when we do, we realize that we do have power collectively. Here are nine dominoes. We are the littlest one, right? Compared to the deep state, the biggest one. If we work together, we can... knock down the big one. Yeah, we can do it. Because if there were 29 dominoes, the height would be the Empire State Building. But we still have the same leverage in numbers. So if we tell two people, if we share this podcast, for instance, with two people about the 9/11 evidence, and they tell two more people, we get a real investigation. That's how it's going to happen. People wonder, how are we going to do this? I'm so small. Yeah, you're small. I'm small. We're all small. But we've done the groundwork for you. All you have to do is send the link to Patriots with Grit, a podcast, to everybody you know, and we've got our investigation. Are you going to do it?
Well, Richard, I have to jump in here. You mentioned NIST earlier on, and do you think they were just, you think they were bought off? I mean, I know they didn't say much. They didn't speak out. What's your take on that? What's your position?
Well, they provided a fraudulent report, spent $20 million of your tax offering. It is voluntary, after all. And
we like you, Richard.
I'm with you.
We like you, Richard.
And they spent 10,000 pages pulling the wool over America's eyes. And they made it such a Potemkin village that and so complex that they're hoping nobody will read it. And most of people, of course, have not read it. And it doesn't even need to be read. You can see right through it just by the evidence that we provided today that they completely ignored.
Well, and also I want to touch on the debris. You know, you hear about, you know, unfortunately, you hear about plane crashes. You hear small engine plane crashes, you know, commercial airlines, they crash. They send out the FAA. They, you know, load them up on a trailer, take them back to their facilities and examine them for, you know, weeks, months, and sometimes years. But yet the debris from this World Trade Center, Twin Towers and Building 7, seemed to be whisked away and hauled off on barges in a matter of days. I have a question as to, you know, what's the purpose of that? Why didn't they keep that behind and analyze it and study it and, you know, really dissect
what was... Well, our key officials shouldn't want to know.
Well, that's right. But, I mean, the FAA will work on a plane forever. You know, and finally they'll say, oh, here's what happened. But by golly, as soon as they get those loaded up on barges and where they sent to China or wherever they sent them to, it seemed like they did it.
Yeah, that study is absolutely crucial. 400 truckloads a day, they began hauling this steel away starting just 2 weeks after 9/11. It was put on barges and, sent to China for recycling before investigators could get their hands on it and do a proper forensic investigation. This is the illegal destruction of evidence in a crime scene, and it's a whole set of crimes in and of itself.
Oh, and I think one of the key things that I saw you on another podcast talking about was the way that the thermite could have got in the building. What was it that the elevator company that had never existed before and went into the building, and then they soon went bankrupt afterwards?
Yeah, Ace Elevator had the contract for the largest elevator modernization in the world. In fact, they came out of nowhere to get this contract.
Imagine that. How long were they around before this?
Well, I think they were probably formed about a year before 9/11.
So they had a lot of experience. So
they came out of the blue a year before, and then poof, they were just gone like the World Trade Center after that, right?
You see, Otis Elevator had the contract up until that time. They were maintaining and building these elevators. They built them and had to maintain them. Ace Elevator came along, and they had 85 employees in the building at the time. These are experts in the rescue vehicles, the elevator cabs, and they fled, not sticking around to help the firefighters. It was quite a scandal that was documented in USA Today. In fact, this elevator modernization is documented in the Elevator World magazine, March 2001. And we need a real investigation into these guys as well.
Wait, so what's this got to do with, I'm looking down at the bottom, it says it's got something to do with the Oklahoma City bombing. The departure of elevator mechanics from the disaster site was unusual. The industry takes pride in rescues, and it talks about, so that's just kind of their.
Oh, yeah, they did work closely with the firefighters making rescues in that case. That probably was not Ace Elevator, right?
I wouldn't think
so. Basically, Richard, could it be summed up to possibly say, I mean, I wouldn't want to be a spreader of mis or disinformation by any means on Patriots with Grit, but could those 85 employees of that newly formed Ace Elevator, which was around approximately a year before the Twin Towers were brought down, were they just doing their due diligence and working on applying thermite, compromising the building for that whole year prior to the 9/11 event, or what's your take on that?
Well, what we do know is that the elevators were protected with armed guards, as witnesses have suggested, are seen and testified to. What we do know is that the elevator shaft way, the hoistways, are immediately adjacent to the core columns in and beams in the building. What we do know is that there's 2-inch thick gypsum board around each of those hoistways. And what we do know is that there were many, many complaints by tenants of white powder coming through the air conditioning ducts and getting all over their stuff. So it adds up to lead me to suspect that there's an undercover operation going on here. Of some kind.
They so be the, could it take 85 people a year to do that?
I could. Yeah.
So I'm trying to think of it. You cut through the drywall, the gypsum board, and you have immediate access to those columns. How much thermite would it take? And what is it comprised of? Is it a paste, like a plastic explosive, or?
Well, in this case, we know that we have small red-gray chips of liquid-applied super thermite.
Okay.
Okay. And so in dual layers, that's how we know, one of the ways we know it's liquid-applied. So it could be that under the guise of a fireproofing operation, which we also had the year going on before 9/11, curiously, on the same floors that were hit by the planes, or similar, very, very closely associated floors that were hit by the planes, as documented by Kevin Ryan in his digwithin.net blog site. He documents these fireproofing upgrades, and it needs a lot more research and investigation by people who can bring these contractors with subpoena power to the table.
Well, between the fireproofing and the elevator maintenance, I would say they could get the job done.
Well, and one of the most critical things you said, that this stuff can only be manufactured in defense labs.
Well, yes, it's extremely high tech. It's not made commercially. It's not made in a cave in Afghanistan. Nanothermite, super thermite was developed prior to 2001 by Lawrence Livermore and Los Alamos Lab. So we can look there too.
Okay.
So that brings me to one. I have one more final question, Richard. AIA, yeah. Association of Architects. Do you think it was possible that after this happened, they were more or less silenced or bought off, kind of like doctors were with COVID and the vaccines?
We have gone to almost a dozen conferences by architects and the American Institute of Architects in particular, had our evidence booth, showed Building 7 and the Twin Towers coming down, asked the architects to look at this and say, have you seen this before? Oh, yeah, that's a controlled demolition. In the case of Building 7, we say, well, did you know when this happened? No. On 9/11. What? That's not a Twin Tower. Right. It's Building 7. And it was destroyed also 7 hours after. Wasn't hit by a plane. The whole story. And they go, whoa. And they sign up for a new investigation, putting their names on the list for a new investigation. And so we got asked not to come back after about a dozen of these adventures, having signed up hundreds and hundreds of architects onto the petition. They said, our missions are not aligned, is what they said.
Basically, so, we've been told to silence you, so get the heck out.
Essentially. Now, the AIA is the preeminent architectural organization. The money flows to them from the most affluent architectural firms, and the largest, who work for the banks, who is essentially who pays them to build these large buildings and tall buildings. So they know where their bread is buttered, and even we've even had members of the AIA board just lying, making up stuff, saying, for instance, that diesel fuel brought down Building 7 in a meeting where we were bringing this issue up for a resolution for a new investigation.
That guy got a bonus.
We got 12% of the AIA members to vote for it. Wow. We only had 5 minutes to present this 1 hour presentation.
Oh, man.
Well, Richard, I know your website is just chock full of data, of videos, of proof. Give us your website again and give us that documentary again that's coming out, and also how people can go there and support you and what you're doing and that great work.
You bet. It's richardgage911.org, as you see in the upper left. We have several success stories of getting up there in the media, including Geraldo Rivera, who said, oh, well, these 1,350 architects must know something I don't. Yeah, sign up for our email list so that you can all learn more. That video, the documentary that is just so precious because it has 40 now, high-rise architects, structural engineers, metallurgists, chemists, physicists, controlled demolition experts all laying out this evidence. You'll see that a little lower if you want to keep scrolling down. You'll also see...
It's not letting me go down any further.
Oh, that's curious. Well, I'm sure it'll let you guys go down further if you want to see all the incredible evidence and interviews and presentations and speaking engagements we've done.
And your new film, Crime Scene to Courtroom, Richard, it's going to have several different episodes, isn't that correct?
Oh, yeah, a couple of dozen, in fact. We go into depth, more depth than has ever been attempted before in the World Trade Center evidence. And it is designed to convince a grand jury that we do need a real investigation of the perpetrators. And persons of interest are named for them, and we encourage them to use their subpoena power and get a real investigation and maybe some indictments, huh?
I like so much what you're saying, Richard, but I do like three words that Richard said throughout this whole episode. One is voluntary, and the other one is grand jury. So if you add up those three, voluntary regarding tax and grand jury, we know what can be done there. And people need to wake up and pay attention and learn and listen and understand what the voluntary part means and what grand jury means. Right, Randy?
Yep, absolutely. We got to start taking our legal system into our own hands.
Yeah,
Richard, I just want to say I appreciate you coming back on here with us and sharing all this truth. I think that you have done an amazing amount of work, and you know the time, and I know it's a labor of love what you've done.
Yeah, it really is. It's a mission. I'm being driven, and I won't stop until we have a real investigation. I don't care how long it takes.
So when did you actually start was it the day after, or once you got your, you know, the adrenaline out of you, did you start at that point saying, hey, I got to look into this. Something's not right.
Yeah. And you say adrenaline. I was actually real angry. Mm. I mean, I felt that in my bones. You're not going to pull this over, because I was minding my own business, you know, listening to one day. I'm way back from a construction observation meeting in Lafayette, California, where I worked on this high school. And I heard David Ray Griffin on the radio being interviewed by Bonnie Faulkner. And I was just shocked, because he was talking about a third building that came down. He was talking about a lot of this evidence we've been talking about today. And I'm going, this can't be true. If this were true, I would have heard about it. I'm an architect. This is a massive 47-story skyscraper. You know, we pride ourselves in keeping up to date with structural failures here. And it was hidden from us. So I had to find out if this was true. And turns out it was. So a couple of months into it, I pulled together a PowerPoint. I'd never done a PowerPoint. I'd never spoken in public. I bought my firm pizza. There's 15 architects there. And I said, you guys got to come look at this. And so they all came. And at the end, they all raised their hands after seeing what you guys saw today. Yeah, we got to have a real investigation. These are controlled demolitions.
Right. So you had 100% buy-in at your firm then.
Yeah, it was incredible.
Amazing.
And some of them thought I was just nuts beforehand. But after they actually seeing the evidence, it's a whole nother story. So you have to use this evidence, these documentaries, these presentations, this podcast, to make your point to your family members, your friends, your business associates, media people, and your elected representatives in government. That's what it takes. Show them the podcast.
We will.
Yeah. I can't wait till this documentary. I'm a documentary freak. I mean, I don't watch TV anymore. All I do is listen, learn, and observe, and implement from what we're taking in. So we just want to tell you here at Patriots with Grit, thanks for coming back on.
Appreciate it.
Everything you're doing. And we hope to have you back on at some point, especially after your documentary is released. So keep the keep the fight and keep the faith, my friend.
We will. Gail and I have been working so hard over the last 2 years together since we separated from AE911 Truth, and we're going to just keep going at it and hitting it harder and harder and harder. We need to wake up Joe Rogan. We need to wake up Tucker, who have just been dancing, you know, with their toes in the waters of the truth about 9/11. But we'll cut through here.
Well, I believe you were on PBD, Patrick Bet David's podcast. Yeah. So I think you're almost to the point with Joe Rogan and Tucker. I mean, if you can get on PBD, I think you're at Patriots with the Grit. Sure. You know, you're definitely right around the corner of getting on Joe Rogan. So we thank you so much, Richard. We're going to have you back on here and give us some more updates.
You bet. Thanks, guys.
All right. Take care.
Thank you.
See you later. Thanks for watching another exciting episode of Patriots with Grit. We want to keep you informed, so if you would, just go over to patriotswithgrit.com and give us your first name and your email so we can keep you up to date. Also, be sure to subscribe, like, and share so we can keep bringing you truth. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.